Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, offering canoes, kayaks, and advice for anyone wanting to experience solitude on Wisconsin waterways. 2620 Rimrock Road in Madison or rutabagashop.com.
Good morning. It's 10 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in today and for the rest of this week for Joy Cardine. Brand recognition is not a term you hear used a lot when you're talking about Republicans, or at least you haven't been hearing about it much until now. House Minority Leader John Bonier says if Republicans are going to get back on the path to power, they've got to work on branding, and he's got a group of like-minded colleagues who are going to take this task on and come up with a brand for Republicans. Our guest this hour is going to try and help us make sense of it all. John Leo is a senior fellow for the Manhattan Institute and the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, and you may recognize his name from his work as a former syndicated columnist for U.S. News and World Report. What do you think about the brand recognition efforts being undertaken by Republicans? Do you think that marketing is really enough, or is there value to having an effective brand? Are you happy to see Republicans try to figure out what their brand is and hope that they'll stay right where they are? You can join in with your questions and comments by calling us toll-free. That number is 800-642-1234. Or if you're calling from Madison, it is 263-1890. And don't forget, you can also join us by email. More people are doing that. And that address is talk@wpr.org. And we'll try to fit those comments in as well. John Leo, good morning. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good morning, Gene. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Good to have you along. Well, let's start out with this whole issue of branding. What, you know, when you think of the Republican Party, I never really thought of that, or the Democrats for that member, as being, you know, a quote-unquote brand. But traditionally, what's their brand been?
Well, first of all, I think branding is a colossally wrong-headed move at this point. The idea that the crisis in the Republican Party can be solved by marketing, as if it were a product that the public just didn't understand, is so out of whack with the reality. I think the problem for the Republican Party, besides the obvious war in Iraq and Bush's inability to either win it or get out, the real problem is that the glue that has held it together, Reagan and the war against communism, the Cold War, have disappeared. And you are now beset by Reagan nostalgia, an attempt to turn Fred Thompson into Ronald Reagan, and all kinds of dithering, when the real problem is how can we convince the American people that this is a vibrant party that understands the problems we face.
So Representative Boehner came up with this idea to do branding. What do you think about that? I mean, that's a step in the process, but it doesn't sound like you think it's going to really do anything.
No, as I say, the American public is pretty sophisticated. It understands that a Madison Avenue approach to problems is wrong. I think what the party has to do is to convince large numbers of voters that they are sincerely interested in bettering the lives of Americans. In other words, coming up with programs and statements that show a grasp of reality. And marketing is not, you know, this isn't selling a breakfast cereal. This is attempting to save a party that looks like it's primed for a major loss in 08.
But starting programs, working on statements, and then following through, that takes time.
Well, yes, but I think you have to convince people that you are on track. You have to say and do things that call attention to your sincerity and your brains and your ability to turn corners. The immigration crisis, I would say, it shows more folly on the part of the Republicans, where it seems to me that they're all running around in circles trying to evade the problem or guess what the public will want. Bless your soul, the public has told pollsters for years what it wants. It wants the border sealed. 66% in the last poll I saw, the public want to control the border. And yet the Republicans run around talking about people who want to seal the border as racists, as anti-diversity, as backward-looking people. Why is it backward-looking to want to prevent a wholesale breaking of the law? I mean, you have 12 million people here illegally. The plan that that Bush seems to want to push through with Teddy would probably, you know, probably invite another 12 million through here and another 15 years. And the real question is, what kind of future, what kind of population, how many people do we want? Do we want to keep rewarding illegality? Now, those are the issues that the Republicans are simply not facing. Very, very few people are. Thompson has made a few realistic remarks there, but the rest of them just don't show any courage or creativity on immigration.
And you use immigration as an example, but what does it tell you about the state of the party as a whole when, you know, the House Minority Leader says what we're going to do is not come up with new ideas, new programs, new statements, what have you. What we are going to come up with is marketing. What we're going to come up with is a brand. And it seems to me there's a disconnect there between what you're saying and what he is saying, and it's almost like never the twain shall meet.
Exactly. If you want to really go back to Reagan, excuse me, you would have to say, what is the key to Reagan's appeal? Now, mm-hmm. I think some of it was that he was handsome and articulate, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the real key to his success was that everybody believed that he believed what he said. And even a lot of Americans who thought his program was wrong-headed said to themselves, this is an authentic politician. He spent 25 years going around the country telling people what he thought as a lecturer for GE and others, and as governor later, and he is a sincere man. This is what he wanted to do. He wanted to win the Cold War and lower taxes and a few other things, and that was the key to his appeal. Now, here's a party that was carried for years by a man who spoke bluntly on what he wanted and followed through on it and won the respect of even bitter opponents because they knew that he was telling you what he really thought. Now, if that's the key, that you have to tell the American people what you really think, why are these people talking about marketing, which is a sophisticated con job, instead of substance? We are in many crises at the same time. Talk to the American people. I think they'll listen if you say something substantial.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with John Leo this morning about the idea of branding the GOP, of marketing the Republican Party. We'd like to hear what you've got to say. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number. If you're calling from Madison, it is 263-1890. And we have a call from Madison right now. John joins us, and good morning, John.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good, thanks for taking my call. I think if we want to talk about branding and some of the things and, you know, mistakes of the Republican Party, I think one of the biggest mistakes is the allowed redefinition of the word liberal in today's context. Liberalism is not socialism. However, modern liberalism is socialism. You know, classical liberalism is all about laissez-faire, and it's all about the individual. And the fact that, you know, a lot of the ideas that the Republican Party supposedly has are classically liberal, that has really muddled the waters here, and I think that is a huge mistake, and I personally would like to see that corrected. And I'll hang up now and listen. Thanks.
All right, John, thanks for the call. And John Leo, is that a case where the Republicans got off track and are too liberal and didn't tell anybody about it, or what do you think about John's comments?
Well, first of all, I hate to get dragged into liberal versus conservative mm-hmm. arguments because the words are so elastic and can mean so many things. As John said, the word liberal arose as an individualistic approach and that no longer means exactly that. I would say the difference between the two parties is that the Democrats believe in government. The Republicans believe in individual effort, responsibility, and tradition. And one party is liberationist, and the other is worried about tradition. So I think that's the break. And I think if Republicans wanted to stress that, they would have to say, look, We're not against government. We think government is useful, but we think that most of the work has to be done by families and individuals to take care of themselves. And Republicans will always blame, Democrats will always blame society when things go wrong. I mean, take, for instance, the affirmative action programs. A lot of the motivation for affirmative action is that society is racist, society will not let blacks get ahead, and Republicans disagree with that. I don't think you can be depicted as racist if you think that blacks, like whites and everybody else, have to get ahead on their own effort rather than pointing towards society as a villain. So I think those are the tendencies that break the parties in different directions. The Republicans have an extra problem in that if you are running for office and you think government is probably too large, it's very hard to get people to work in government or for you in government if you have a less interest in government itself. So Democrats, since they believe very heavily in government, can easily recruit and get people to work in government. Republicans favoring individual effort are going to have a much tougher time getting quality people in Washington or even state houses on the basis of their philosophy that government is a lesser partner in progress. The individual and community groups are much more important.
John Leo is our guest this hour, a senior fellow for the Manhattan Institute and the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, and a former syndicated columnist for U.S. News and World Report. We're talking about a proposal by House Minority Leader John Boehner that the Republicans' path back to power rests on brand recognition, and Boehner would like to see a marketing campaign drawn up that would get Republicans back before the public eye in a very positive light. John Leo says it's going to take more than that. We'd like to find out what you think as well. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number in Madison. It's 263-1890. And you can also join us by email if you'd like. That address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 22 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9 with Kathleen Dunn, it's one of the key issues shaping the 2008 presidential debates. Kathleen and her guest will take a look at the U.S. healthcare system. That's up after 9 this morning here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we are talking about the Republican Party with John Leo, a former syndicated columnist for U.S. News and World Report, and a proposal by House Leader John Boehner, who says that what Republicans really need to do is get a good marketing brand going, get some branding on the Republicans, and pretty soon they'll be back in business. John Leo says there is more to it than that and says they've got some work to do. Let's go back to calls right now and head out to Peshtigo, where Scott joins us. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. I'd agree with your guest. I think the idea of trying to brand the GOP just is asinine. I mean, there's a lot more that they need to do than to just try and develop a brand. And I think one of the problems that they have, you talked about someone with a strong will and character who just spoke what they believe, Ronald Reagan, and there isn't anybody in that party anymore. The last guy that was around was Newt Gingrich when the Republicans took over the House and Senate. And I think one of the reasons you don't have anybody is I think they're afraid. I think they're afraid to come forward and to really speak what they believe are the important issues in society today, because I think they're afraid they're going to get beat up. And if you look at it historically, my favorite example of that was when the Republicans won the House of Representatives. One of the very first stories was Newt Gingrich, I think it was in November and December on Time magazine, a cover shot, and it said, "The Gingrich Who Stole Christmas," which was completely unprofessional and ridiculous and in nature. But I think they're afraid to get just beat up in the press for coming out and saying who they really are. So I think they just dance around every issue. I think they kind of stick their finger to the wind and try and find out, you know, what do people want? What's the safe bet? And by doing that, they just have no core value anymore because they don't really preach what they believe.
Scott, thanks for the call. And John Leo, what about that? Are they lacking in the courage to say what they really think?
I think so. One of the things I would say if I were a Republican running for office now, I would say that we have come to you for decades saying we believe that government should be small and spending should be kept down. But as soon as we control all three branches, Senate, House, and presidency, as soon as we did that, we started spending like drunken sailors. Now, I would say we have to go. Republicans would have to go to the American people and say, "Look, we betrayed our legacy. We betrayed you. We said we were not going to do this, and we've been building bridges to nowhere and sacking the public with earmarks. And how can we criticize Democrats for doing that when we are enthusiastically doing it ourselves?" Same with corruption. Republicans are probably louder and more frequent critics of congressional corruption, and yet look at how many Republicans have been caught doing it. So I think what you'd have to do is you have to say we've lost our way, that we will not keep spending money we don't have, and we will not keep tolerating corruption in our party. I think you'd get people's attention if you said that.
President Bush, though, Scott was concerned that, Republicans aren't saying what they think. And, you know, President Bush says what he thinks, at least that's what it appears to me. And he, you know, he stays the course. He does all those things. He has a lot of political courage in a lot of ways. He's also sort of the face of the party right now. Is it possible to change course, you know, to do what you're talking about when President Bush is still sitting in the White House?
Well, that's an insoluble problem. We had an analog for that, and that is Lyndon Johnson in the waning days of his presidency, and Democrats didn't know what to do. You know, he was the leader of the party. He could probably decide, to some extent, the fate of elections, and yet he was totally discredited, unable to go in public without tumult. So I think that's the state we're at now. Right or wrong, Bush presents a real problem to all candidates. So they're going to criticize him, ignore him. In New Jersey, they had a little tactical thing. They invited him in for a fundraiser, but didn't publicize it. So he raised a lot of money. He can still do that. But almost nobody knew he was there. So he's the invisible fundraiser for Republicans. I don't know what I'd do if I were running. You don't want to attack a beleaguered incumbent president. On the other hand, a lot of people think that he is the main cause of Republican woes now, so you'd have to dissociate yourself. The candidates for president aren't sure what they want to do. At this point, they're not attacking Bush, which is probably wise, but they have to try to delicately separate themselves. You're right, Bush has shown a lot of courage. But there aren't many results on the Iraq front. It's a tragedy what's happened, and the public wants to know what candidates think. I mean, look at the problems Hillary has had to dance around her vote for the war and sort of come out on all sides of it. I think they're all in that boat. They don't know quite what to do, and they don't want to get stuck if Bush pulls it out and gets a settlement, and then someone will run using their quotes in their TV ads. So I think they're all in a bind on what to say or do about Bush.
Let's go to Appleton right now, and Mike joins us in Appleton. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. I agree with your guest. If, in fact, one of these Republicans decided to stand up and take whatever position, you know, he had to take, attack Bush or whatever, do they have time? Do they have time to influence what's going to happen in the 08 elections?
Well, that's a good question, John Leo. Time, there's still over a year, but in a lot of senses, that's a pretty short stretch.
Well, I'm not sure that any individual speaking out is going to affect the election. I was also taking into account that lots of Republicans are running at every level in 2008, and some of those people would prevail and reorder the party if they won. I just think... this is maybe redundant, but I think that the electorate is just so cynical about politicians and their motivations that if people said anything that seemed straightforward and quotable, that they would get enormous attention just for their candor. This was true of McCain a couple of years ago. I think he's kind of lost that magic, whether it's himself or the press. He got a big free ride from the press, which has since turned against him. And of course he's he brought some more woes on himself by courting the hard right in the party, but that path is still open to Republicans to say, look, this is what I think. If we don't say what we think, then we are a box of Wheaties that people want to resell in a different way. But it's not a salesmanship problem. It's an honest thing, a substantive political problem that we have to address, or no one will elect us.
You know, I was thinking about this when I was reading on this last night, and it occurred to me while I was reading all these woes that are facing the Republican Party and their attempts to fix it that, you know, a couple of years ago, the Democratic Party was in a very similar situation where it was a lot of people were arguing, well, it's hard to know what they stand for. And not now, basically, you know, a lot of people would say, well, they're just simply standing against Republicans. But it seems to me that they're also in a very similar situation.
Well, that's a very good point, Gene. I think they are in a similar situation, and it's masked by the fact that the Republicans are in more disarray than they are. But in fact, they have the internet lefties versus the mainstream. I don't know what you'd call them, moderate liberals or something, and they're at each other's throats all the time. So far, the internet people have held their fire, but a few of them have threatened to get anybody, Republican or Democrat, who disagrees with them. So the Democrats face the same problem. This is a normal problem of a two-party democracy, that you can't get what you want. There's only two parties, and you bundle together groups of people who are ill-suited colleagues, and you hope that you can tiptoe past it.
You know, I want to ask a kind of a related question. I mean, you talked about Ronald Reagan you know, what he stood for. And in some senses, though, it was a very different time in terms of the media. And you brought up the issue of blogging and the internet. And how would Ronald Reagan sell today if he were in this particular media landscape? Would he have the same sort of effect on voters that he had, you know, 20-some-odd years ago?
It's hard to say. I suspect he would. I think the problems, as you point out, would be more difficult. But Reagan was a kind of positively remote character. You never knew exactly what he was thinking. He was, therefore, a perfect presidential candidate, because somebody who shows you his appendectomy scar, as Lyndon Johnson did, or keeps confessing about bimbo eruptions of his own, sort of loses that presidential aura, and I think that aura would have sustained him even in the YouTube era. He was very good at staying just away from the media machine and yet using it correctly. So I think he would have done pretty well.
And in a sense, though, I mean, he was good at, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but he created sort of his own brand. I mean, and it's one that had carried on to this day. People talk about Reaganism.
Yes. The problem today, this is to switch the subject a little bit, is that there are two Republican parties. One is the party of business, which has been very heavily tilted toward big business in the two Bush terms, and the party of traditional values and social values. And both sides sort of look askance at the other. They were held together by Reagan's personality and the Cold War ethic. And now they're like two different parties. And I think the only way any Republican is going to be an effective president or even get to the White House is to somehow marry those two halves again. Now, what you could do is say that, look, this party stands for help to business, but it doesn't stand for Enron. It doesn't stand for tax breaks only for multi-billion-dollar corporations. And what the party will have to do, or that particular presidential candidate will have to do, is to indicate that they're willing to strike out against, to lash out against big business when it's dead wrong. You know, I think Enron was a perfect example for Bush to say, look, this is not what the party stands for, and to say some tough things about the ethics in big business. He didn't do it. And you'd have to say the same thing about the social conservatives. Some of them have gone over the top with criticisms of evolution and other things that that most Americans don't share. You'd have to finesse that too. You'd have to say, look, we're not two parties. We're one party with two tendencies, and there has to be some goodwill and some concession and some ability to get along. But I do think that. If the president was able to talk against big business and some of its ethical lapses, which is very hard to do since they're contributors, it would serve the party very well. Gary Wills once said, the only constituency you get to sell out is your own, meaning that if you're a Catholic president like Jack Kennedy, you come out against aid to schools. If you're a Republican president, you get to open up China. You get to go against the tendency in your party, and people admire you because you go against the tendency of your party. So I think that's what a candidate has to do.
Scott joins us now from Appleton. Good morning, Scott.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good.
Good. I'm listening to this almost in disbelief that this is being thought of as a revelation that, oh, my gosh, they're going to brand themselves when it's everybody should understand it's a rebranding. You've gone through 6 years of the most sophisticated marketing we've ever seen, everything from the war that is going on to things such as the Clear Skies Initiative is one name, Tom DeLay's War on Christmas and War on Christianity as a fundraising tool. You've had the No Child Left Behind. It has just been one marketing ploy after another, death tax being changed to, or the inheritance tax being changed to death tax. It can just go on and on. Global warming being changed to climate change. And I'm looking at the situation thinking, is the media that lackadaisical about it that, hey, we're just supposed to accept all this?
So, Scott, it sounds like you've had enough of marketing for a while.
Yes, I think that there should be a lot more accountability, and to say that this is a branding is almost laughable.
All right.
It's a rebranding.
All right, Scott, thanks for the call. And John Leo, what about that? Is
I enjoyed Scott's partial list of...
I'd forgotten about some of those, yeah.
Terrible euphemisms. I used to do a column every 3 or 4 months on the amazing euphemisms. He's got a good number of them, but... one I noticed just last week is that suicides in Guantanamo are now known as self-harming gestures, which is pretty rich, I think, you know, for a suicide. Anyhow, he's right, but I don't think we can do much about Congress's tendency to use self-congratulatory prose when naming bills. That's always done. But I think we can go beyond the label. We're belaboring this point about branding the party, but it isn't a matter of branding. It's about sincerity and saying something directly to the American people that they will believe that you believe. And I don't see any or many Republicans on the scene willing to do that.
And I heard in Scott's voice a good deal of cynicism. I don't think he believes anything anybody says.
What, Scott?
Yeah.
It could be. But again... not to talk about Scott, but to talk about the public in general.
Sure.
I think the public is very jaded about politicians. I mean, ask any friend of yours how many politicians do they really admire of either party, and you're liable to get a very short list.
Just a little shorter than journalists, I think. Steve joins us now from Fish Creek. Good morning, Steve.
Scott stole my thunder.
Oh, well, there's plenty of room for you, Steve.
What I'm just thinking, you know, what do we make in this country anymore? If it's not about brand recognition for an endless war on terror, we've got Bush over in Europe right now, and what's he really doing? He's selling a plan for money-making corporations that make weaponry. We're an imperialist nation now. We have an endless war on terror that we're marketing. Well, it's not Fords and Chevrolets anymore. It's Boeing and it's Singer bomb sites and it's, you know, it's all these corporations that now run our country, buy our legislation with lobbyists and sell their products. We're talking about some kind of defense system in Europe. That's a big profit, big sale. He's over there selling a big contract to Europe. Buy this, and that's what we do. We are now corporate America.
Steve, thanks for the call. And John Leo, are we all really just consumers of politics? Is this all just one big marketing ploy? I don't know if I'd go that far.
I don't think I would either. I mean, he's right that big business can push politicians around and get into the salesmanship business. But I think there's more to it than that. I don't think, as Edwards does, that the war on terror is a bumper sticker or a marketing opportunity. I think it's a real threat. And if you don't get it after all the explosions and terror tactics from the U.S. coal and others in the Middle East to Spain and Britain and the plots here in America. If you don't take that seriously, I think we're in real trouble, that we have to understand that there are lunatics out there willing to do us in and to kill tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people, and you have to take that seriously. So there's more than just salesmanship going on here.
John Liu is our guest during this hour, former syndicated columnist for U.S. News and World Report, also a senior fellow for the Manhattan Institute and the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. And we are talking about a proposal by Representative John Boehner to rebrand the Republican Party. And we've been talking about the whole notion of branding a political party and what that really means. Our guest says it's going to take a lot more than that. It's going to take some substance to really bring the Republican Party back around. We'd like to find out what you think. 800-642-1234 in Madison. It is 263-1890. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 19 minutes before 9 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine. Kathleen Dunn is here after 9, and the discussion will focus on some of the health care reforms being offered by presidential candidates in time for the 2008 presidential elections. That's coming up after 9. This hour, we're talking with John Liu about the Republicans' efforts, a proposal by John Boehner to, quote, rebrand or brand, however you want to phrase it, the Republican Party, and give them something to rally around as they head towards the 2008 elections. Let's get back to the phones, and Jeff joins us now from Chippewa Falls. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Thank you.
Sure.
I just want to point out, I think your guest is pretty much right on with his characterization of the Republican Party. I'd add one thing, though. After the Reagan era and the end of the Cold War, there was kind of a rebirth with, you know, Newt Gingrich and the Contract with America, where exactly what your guest is saying, for a brief moment, people actually knew what the Republican Party stood for, but more importantly, believed that those saying it were actually going to carry it out. Where now I think the cynicism is just so high, no one believes that Republicans believe in less government because they've proved otherwise.
Let me ask you this, Jeff. Is your cynicism too far gone? I mean, what's it going to take to turn it around?
Well, I'm in the Republican Party, and I've been trying to tell my colleagues this for a couple of years now, that you have to do more than just say you're for smaller government. You actually have to have those fights, whether it's with the teachers union or the press or whatever, and stand up for what you believe in, and I'm not seeing it.
All right, Jeff, thanks for the comments. John Liu, it sounds like a familiar story, something I've heard from you just a few minutes ago.
Well, I guess Jeff and I agree with one another, yes. I think that rather than rebranding, what the Republicans have to do is think very hard about giving the public a reason to vote Republican. Why would anybody want to vote Republican now? Unless you're in the party or expecting a contract from the party, you would have to rack your brain and say, what can we give the public, what can we say and do for the public that will ring a bell? And I don't think candidates are asking that question. They're playing preventive defense here. How can I avoid making a mistake that will sink me at the polls? And you get all this gobbledygook and double talk, and the public reads that pretty well. This guy doesn't want to do anything but stay in office. So if you can't provide a reason to vote Republican, then they're not going to win.
I've got an email here from Roger in Madison. It says, one of my favorite quotes seems pertinent, and it goes like this. The idea that you can merchandise candidates for high office like breakfast cereal is the ultimate indignity to the democratic process, and that is attributed to Adlai Stevenson in 1956. I don't know if Adlai Stevenson really said that, but it sounds like he was sort of ahead of his time.
Well, if he said it, he's ahead of his time, and if he didn't, he could have.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, yeah, we're on the same wavelength here, but I do think the two-party thing has to be addressed as well. You have to tell the social conservatives why they should be in an alliance with often rapacious sounding big business, and to tell big business that they can't look down their nose on people who care about social policies, because that's the air we all breathe. They don't They don't listen to one another. And Reagan kept them in balance. But as you pointed out, Gene, it was a different era.
George joins us now from Madison. Hi, George.
Good evening. Morning, gentlemen. I guess there seems to be a theme here that not too many of us can believe anything either party says. You're talking about Republicans here, but I think we have two broken products that are both parties are trying to sell when neither of them, most of us and the people I talk to, don't see government willing to change because it's all about getting elected and getting your party in power. It's not about what's good for the American people, and marketing is not going to change that. We can't believe either party gives a damn. Thank you.
All right, short and to the point, George. Sounds like it sounds like a lot of the electorate these days.
Well, here's another theme. Ask yourself, why would a first-rate person run for the House, the Senate, or the presidency? There's no other field they could get into where they're going to take more abuse, where they'll be more susceptible to hit-and-run tactics on YouTube or Facebook. Where if you pinch your secretary's fanny in 1962, someone will dig it up and it'll be in the papers for weeks. If you go into law or medicine or any other field, you don't have to put up with that. So I think we are busy creating conditions under which we will get second-rate candidates, and I think that's the problem we have to address.
And at the same time, you talk about that and just that sort of scrutiny that candidates are under. Almost reflexively, they would keep their heads down, and you know, you'd be very cautious about saying what you really think, I think.
That's right, and you probably would spend much more time on thinking about marketing than you should as well, since you are trying to sell yourself in an age in which everybody's cynical. You might forget about substance and think about breakfast cereals.
And all of a sudden, here we are doing a show for an hour on marketing a political party.
That's right.
Janice joins us from La Crosse. Hi, Janice.
Hi, good morning, Gene, and your guest. Yes, exactly. I feel like we're all cynical right now, but I mean, excuse me, the Democrats, they're out there selling themselves, good old Clinton and Obama. And, you know, I mean, all those guys ran right away with get the press and get them out in front so the sheep can follow that right away, you know, so the press can use that to make sure that they keep hearing those words over and over, and so they can get that stamped in their brain. When then you have people like who I am for, Senator Brownback from Kansas, who doesn't have the money, who can't really get out there, and the press isn't going to give them boo-hoo, you know, not on ABC, CBS, or anything. You only think there's three candidates running out there, or four or five. You know, they don't tell these other poor guys that don't have the money, but do have the integrity and do have their, you know, voting that they have held up in Congress. And, you know, the press isn't going to cover them. You know, let's have a debate. Let's get them all out there, people. Let everybody get out, and let's not market Democrats, Republican. Let's have the truth and godly truth set us all free. Thank you.
All right, Janice from La Crosse and John Leo, a very idealistic statement there. Why not just have a debate? We can have the candidates talk about the issues and the voters will make a choice. And is that really the world that we're living in these days?
Well, I endorse the sentiment. I don't think you can have a debate now when there are like 14 people in both parties running for president. George Will referred to these debates as parallel press conferences, which is a good term. What he means is that everybody just answers a question in a flat way, and then you go on to the next candidate mm-hmm. who does that. So you're not getting Lincoln and Douglas here, and you're not going to have that, probably not until both parties pick a nominee, in which case you'll get a manufactured, distasteful debate anyway. But I don't know what you can do. The media is so strong and the scrutiny is so great that candidates are terrified to say what they really think for fear it will lose some important constituency. And if you're trying to play defensive ball and just avoid errors, you're going to sound like a press release most of the time.
Now, Janice did make a good point that there are a lot more candidates running out there than some people might know about. Is there any candidate in your mind in the Republican ranks who has the potential to unite the two parties, as you say, to become that head and that will bring everybody together under the same tent?
It's hard to guess at this point. It's a reminder that a lot of the elites, when Roosevelt ran for president, dismissed him as a party boy and, if not, an idiot. Walter Lippmann, you know, the most prominent columnist of the day, thought that Roosevelt should not be elected because he was just a shallow fellow who somehow got pushed through Harvard. So you never know what someone has in them until you get them in the White House. I think, along with probably millions of others, that all of the current Republican nominees have a huge flaw, and it's hard to see how each can overcome that flaw. So somebody will. You can predict that someone is going to get the nomination, but whoever it is will face an uphill fight in the general election.
Steve joins us now from Madison. Good morning, Steve.
Well, Mr. Leo has a great gift of wordplay, but I believe at the core of his public intellectual posture is deception. And I recall Mr. Leo in his columns being a great supporter of this war machine, of the 9/11 pretext for invasion of countries around the world. Mr. Leo, can you look at the New York buildings exploding, and can you tell me that there weren't explosives deliberately planned in
Okay. I think we're getting a little far afield from the whole idea of rebranding political parties there, John Leo. So I think we'll just move on to our next call and move to Dan from Wanakee. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good morning, guys. I just wanted to call. I was raised conservative Republican, and I've switched over to Democrat, and I just kind of wanted to say why and what might draw me back.
Okay.
First of all, when Bush got in, I was a little frustrated by his inability to speak. This is an ideology thing. It's just like, I just think it's kind of part of the job and just like what you need to do. And I think that maybe they put a name in there instead of putting, I think McCain would have been the better candidate for the party to support. And then I got kind of frustrated with the Iraq war and just the way it was rushed and the way they didn't have a plan. Not necessarily that we were aggressive defensively, because I think that we have to spend the money and we have to be aggressive, but they just weren't smart about it. And that was, you know, and that's something that I really had a problem with. And then the whole thing with campaign finance, it's just like, it's not about, you know, so I know government would have to fund it under my plan, but it's not so much about ideology. You know, I'm still a family values guy. I know that spending has to be kept under control, but, you know, corporations funding these campaigns is just out of hand. And it's like Republicans raise more money, so nor in the future, if they're in power, are they going to, they don't want to pull back those rules and make it harder to do because it benefits them. So right now, I just feel like the Democrats are like a better choice for me.
So, Dan, what's it going to take to get you back into the GOP? I mean, is it going to take a good marketing plan or what?
Well, I think it would just take, you know, maybe if McCain gets his fire back or we get just a little bit of independent thought, and because he's always been one that was weary about the campaign finance and somebody that, you know, is going to be a little more respectful of other countries. There seems to be this idea that if you're not from the United States, you just don't know what you're talking about, and I think that's just scary. And I think it's scary that there's people that still think that the world's only been around for 6,000 years and that, like, humans aren't causing global warming. And this is Republican Party, Republican talk radio stuff, and it's like, it kind of scares me and, like, repels me from the party.
Dan, thanks for the call. And John Leo, somebody who has left but could be persuaded back under the right circumstances.
Well, I think a lot of those points were good, starting with Bush's inability to speak, which is the most puzzling thing. Even in cases when he was right, he would not speak. And when he did speak, he gave a ham-handed, stuttering explanation of things. I don't get that, because he had terrific speechwriters. Michael Gerson, particularly, was probably one of the best ever to have that job, and yet he wouldn't use them except under key circumstances, and he didn't say what he had to say. He somehow is unable to translate himself into a father figure or whatever you want to call what a president has to be. And the other points I agree with, too. I think the dominance of the party by big business, you know, where enormous taxes are written off in small print in a one-paragraph article somewhere. People notice that anyway, and they say, what kind of party is this? You're talking the talk about tradition and values and morality, and yet you're allowing these Enron-type companies to get enormous subsidies. So I think that you're not going to have people like your last speaker back in the party until you address their problems. I think it was a good précis of what has to be done.
We've got time for another caller, and Mike joins us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Mike.
Hi. I'll try to make this quick.
Okay.
I think the last Republican that really had it together was Eisenhower when he talked about the military-industrial complex. And even now, as I look on the Internet, I go to the check out the John Birch Society. The editor of the John Birch Society is calling this administration fascist. Pat Buchanan's publication, his writers are coming right out and talking about the history of the Bush administration's ties with Leo Strauss and Nazism, and talking directly using the word fascism, and this connection with big business and especially the military-industrial complex is so blatant that Bush is trying to soften the word fascism, and this is Tom Hartman's a quote from Tom Hartman. He's trying to soften the word fascism by using it to describe a religious fundamentalist movement, Islamo-fascist, and which is a totally wrong way of referring to that group. What it really is it's this Republican fascism that we're dealing with right now. And I just and people perceive this; they do understand the tie of big business with the Republican Party, but they haven't. They're afraid to put the word fascism to it because it's an F word, and they don't want to use it. So.
Let's give John Leo a chance to respond to that.
Well, I don't agree with the business about Strauss and Nazism. I think that's a bum rap, and that's not what's going on. I do think something like the military-industrial complex is emerging again. I just hope that the next candidate who wins will say something as he's going in the door to the presidency and not as Eisenhower did on his last day when he was leaving after 8 years and just got around to mentioning it.
As we wind up the hour here, Representative Boehner has put together some sort of group of like-minded colleagues, I guess, who are going to be working on this branding, this marketing effort. I don't take it that you expect great things to come out of this group, but what can we look forward to in the next couple of months that'll be a sign that we're being marketed to as opposed to having something of substance in our way?
Well, I think, first of all, you get the reaction. You'll get satire. The Comedy Channel will probably and Leno and Letterman will work on it. I mean, it's inherently a ridiculous idea. Branding is not what has to be done. You have to decide what the party stands for and what will bring the most people together unified to elect Republican candidates. That's not branding. That's reaching out to the voters.
John Leo, thanks for joining us this hour.
Thank you, Gene.
Enjoyed our talk. John Leo, a senior fellow for the Manhattan Institute and the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, and a former syndicated columnist for U.S. News and World Report. We have been talking about a proposal for the past hour from House Minority Leader John Boehner, who says that what Republicans need to do is build some brand recognition. And it's been an interesting hour. If you'd like a copy of the program, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program 65C, or you can also listen in our archives online at WPR.org. Leo Duran produced this hour and also provided us with on-air production as well. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.